In the studio, I've got Lolo, well-known around Raglan, plays soccer for the Roosters, but more interestingly today, you've just come back from the Pacific where you've been the chief scientific officer on a vessel. You're head of research for the Great... Is it the Great Ocean Cleanup or just the Ocean Cleanup?
The Ocean Cleanup.
Calling, okay, all right. And how long were you at sea?
We were at sea for about 3 weeks in total.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long since you got back?
Oh, a couple of months.
Cool. Oh, okay.
Oh, that was in even more, actually. That was in August.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I didn't realize it was that long. So I should stop saying you just got back. You've been back for a little while.
Yeah.
So what was happening on the boat? Tell us what was happening on the boat.
Well, we sailed quite far into the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And yeah, we were doing basically a bunch of research. So sampling at sea for plastic pollution.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the main activity, I guess.
And so this is a project that started a few years ago. Actually, was it quite a young guy who somehow started this?
Yes, and I thought he's still pretty young. Boyan Slat, CEO and founder of the Ocean Cleanup. He founded the organization in 2013, and he was, I think, 17 back then. But yeah, he's now like 20, 27 or something, so that's like 10 years ago.
And so he just managed to be a point of inspiration to do something about this problem and obviously raise a lot of finance.
Yes, that's true. It started with crowdfunding, so yeah. Basically crowdfunding platform, and then from there it just took off. We mostly rely on private donations, philanthropy, those kind of things, but yeah, it's been quite successful at raising funds for sure.
Okay, and the research that's going on basically is how to pick up all the crap in the ocean, really.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we try to map this plastic pollution, but also we try to understand what it is, where does it come from, those kind of things, because it's really important. We want to address, I mean, we're cleaning up, but we also want to address the sources so we don't have to clean up in the future.
Yeah. And one of the things, I was at the science night on Wednesday night at the Harbour View, where you were showing pictures, and one of the things you point out is even though it's called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, it's actually not a pile of rubbish sitting on the water. I'm sure I've seen photos of penguins sitting on top of a pile of rubbish, but that's obviously something different. It mostly looks like ocean and with a few things floating around, really.
Yeah, no, that's correct. And I mean, if it was a trash island, maybe it would be easier because we could just go there and, you know, with a bunch of cranes and pick up all that rubbish. But no, it's spread over millions of square kilometers and makes the problem very difficult to solve.
Yeah. So why is that area, like the North Pacific, are we looking somewhere between Hawaii and California and through that area there? Like there's really no islands or anything around there.
No.
And that's the biggest patch in the world where this garbage is. Why is it around there?
Well, it goes all the way back to the rotation of Earth, actually. And
the rotation of the Earth?
Yes, that's
okay,
correct.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we can go all the way back to that. But yeah, it's just a natural circulation of sea surface currents. What we call gyres is a rotating currents. There is five of those in subtropical oceans. So the North Pacific is one of them, but we have one in the South Pacific, one in the North Atlantic, South Atlantic, South Indian Ocean. So there's five of those.
Yeah.
And they're basically areas that accumulate anything that floats, really. And obviously plastic is one of the things that lasts for a very long time at the surface of the ocean.
Yeah. So how old are the oldest bits of plastic you're finding?
Well, we try to figure this out. There's no direct way to date plastic, but we try to find clues on plastics, like production dates, any sort of like information that can tell us when that plastic was made. And the oldest identified plastic was a buoy from 1966.
So that's off a fishing boat from the 60s?
Yeah,
we
don't know. Yeah. Maybe.
There are always a lot of buoys floating around the Pacific.
Yeah, and they just last. So, yeah, like so far, actually, since like before last year, our record was a fish crate from 1974. And yeah, we just identified new objects, a buoy, white buoy from 1966.
So, I mean, plastic is that post-World War II? Plastic has become common?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it was invented in 19th century, but really started to be widely used during World War II, and then after the war, basically, like the industry moved to more like consumer goods and revolutionary material and invaded like modern life, basically.
Invaded modern life. So, I mean, you're an ocean scientist, but you must be learning quite a bit about plastic at the moment.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's correct. So I started kind of like in the field for plastic pollution in the ocean. That's mostly oceanographers started to wonder about it. But now that field's expanded to, you know, like source to rivers to understanding trash and plastic. So I quite often call myself a trash scientist rather than an oceanographer. But yeah, it went beyond like just the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you showed a graph showing the buildup of, because you've pulled out so much garbage out of the ocean and gone through trying to date as much as possible. The graph really showed an exponential climb in the amount of and the rubbish from each decade, which matches the exponential climb in plastic production. But there also seemed to be a delay too, like it seems to be roughly a decade before rubbish ends up in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Yeah, no, that's correct. So we find a lot of objects from the previous century, quite a few objects from the year 2000, but not many objects from the 2010s. And yes, this is because there's a delay between the time we produce plastic, we use plastic, we discard plastic, and then if that plastic is not well discarded, like discarded in the environment, can link it to rivers, flow into the ocean, and then eventually accumulates in the garbage patch. So that takes time, at least 10 years, and that's kind of what we see in our records, yeah.
And so how much more, because we know what our production's been in the last 10 years, how much more rubbish is likely to end up there?
Well, that's a tricky question to answer. We believe there's about 80 to 100,000 tons of plastics currently. I mean, at least that was an estimate for 2015. But it's really hard to follow, and this is kind of like why we do this type of research, because to really trying to understand, like, you know, what's going on, like how much plastic is coming and then how much plastic is removed naturally, it's, you know, it's important to systematically sort of like sample the area. So this is kind of like what we're doing, but knowing that, yeah, since 2010, over this last decade, we've produced way more plastic than the previous decade, and even more than the previous decade, we could expect that there's more plastic on its way.
So that means, at the very least, we're going to spend the next 10 years cleaning up rubbish there.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the wish, yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, there is definitely, like, if we were to stop, say, like, plastic sources of plastic in the ocean, we would still have to clean up for a little while. And so the organization I work for, like, is putting a target to 2040. By 2040, we want to have removed 90% of the accumulated waste in the garbage patch there. Yeah. So, you know, that brings us to the next 20 years.
So, I mean, you showed us videos, and people can see videos if they go to theoceancleanup.com of the stuff that's been pulled out of the ocean. And some of it's easy to see. Some of it is washing baskets, and you're like, I can identify that, and the buoys from the fishing vessels. But, of course, there's all the microplastics and the stuff that's broken up. Are you having to work quite hard to figure out how to get that out of the water, like on a large scale too?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be really hard, to be honest. The target we place for cleanup is 1 centimeter. So we try to collect everything above 1 centimeter. Sometimes we do collect smaller stuff.
So in terms of depth? Scale?
In terms of size of plastic, right?
Yeah.
We cannot collect like all the small bits. Although we manage to get some of those small bits with the larger objects when we pick up plastic. But I mean, the good news is, you know, in terms of numbers, like microplastics is definitely the far more numerous than larger objects. But in terms of mass of plastics, most of the mass is still contained in larger objects. Like the 3/4 contained in objects larger than 5 centimeters. So in a way, it's good news because it's still sort of, we can still sort of collect it before it breaks down. And we quite often compare that problem with a ticking time bomb. Like the longer you wait, the harder it will get and the more harmful it may be for the environment.
So what is the actual problem? Like, what problems does it cause to have the plastic floating around in the ocean? We know about seabirds getting caught up in beer can plastics and things like that, and we also know that animals are they're ingesting the plastics. But what actual problems does this cause for the sea life and for us?
Well, yeah, so that, I mean, obviously there's problem for marine life in terms of like ingestion, entanglement, for microlife, but there's quite a few other issues. Like one big issue is that plastic is able to transport species all around the world, like coastal species that were not sort of able to cross oceans before plastic was invented. And over the last 70 years, we've seen species from Asia popping up in the American continent, and it's happening all over the world. So it's a big problem for biodiversity. So scientists trying to follow that.
So you're talking about, like, you showed a photo of like a tiny little crab.
Yeah.
That can just sit on a piece of plastic and float.
Yeah.
Unwittingly.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, we work with marine biologists on those questions, and they name the area. Those new species living on plastic, the neopelagic community, because it's a whole community of coastal species that marine biology thought would not survive in the high seas, but they have been because of plastic pollution, and we find that those species actually have been thriving for several generations. So they actually, they reproduce and they're able to basically travel very long distance thanks to those artificial rafts. So that's one of the main issue, and we try to follow that problem of biodiversity. Another issue that we try to follow as well is that plastic that is at the surface of the ocean breaks down, like we were saying, in microplastics and smaller pieces, and we know that impacts plankton, phytoplankton, zooplanktons, and those species at the surface of the ocean, they are responsible for what we call the blue carbon, basically, that the ocean is able to take on carbon for the atmosphere, CO2 from the atmosphere, and sequester and basically store it into the ocean. And that's, all those plankton species are able to do that. And plastic is directly sort of like impacting those species. So we try to understand to which scale it is. And in that way, like, plastic pollution could be and is actually related to climate change and climate issues.
So it's basically impeding that process.
Exactly.
Okay. What about, we've got... whales, which the ones that eat the plankton,
mm-hmm.
and we know they just go around like a giant net and basically absorb it. Presumably, they're getting all the microplastics as well.
Yeah.
And maybe even quite large pieces because they have very large mouths.
Yeah. No,
what happens to them?
I think there was an article not long ago, actually, that was discussing that, like ingestion of microplastics from whales. We believe like they are some of the animals that ingest the most of it because, like you say, they just come with the big mouth and just collect, cannot differentiate between plankton and plastic. And so now it's hard to follow. I mean, we've seen many pictures of whales stranded on the coastline, and their guts were full of plastics and fishing nets and so on. So obviously that becomes a problem. It's not only whales. It's basically any sort of species out there. And why we talk so much about microplastics is because the smaller the plastic, the more sort of accessible it is to more species. And so it's just really important to follow those kind of things.
I guess microplastics might just pass through an animal.
Yeah, it can, because plastic is inert, and so most of the plastic, even us humans, we probably swallow some plastic. Most of it is actually expelled afterwards. But we have also some traces of plastic, microplastics accumulating in tissues, in blood. There was an article earlier this year about plastic found in human blood, and so it's just everywhere. Anywhere scientists look for plastic, basically they've managed to find plastic now.
There's probably some on the moon.
Most likely.
Yeah, most likely. We've probably left some plastic on the moon.
I know, we're sending new, new objects to the moon at the moment, so yes, probably.
Plastic is actually the master race. It's just using us the master species. It's using us to get around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Something you showed to a picture of, you talked about how there's bits of plastic, and there is some, like, is it algae that grows on it? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, microbes, algae, all sort of things, yeah.
And that's the sort of stuff that some marine species eat, and so they just end up eating the plastic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's correct. So microbes first starts to populate plastic in the ocean, and then all sort of like larger organisms start to grow on it, gives the plastic a smell. All that plastic we remove from the ocean is really smelly.
Yeah.
And it's all that microbial life. And so it looks and smells and tastes like food. And so lots of plastic that we actually collect, they all have like bite marks of different size. And so clearly marine life is feeding on it.
Yeah, and it looked like the picture of the bite marks, it looked like quite jagged. The plastic was jagged, so I presume that's quite jagged pieces of material getting into the fish species.
Yeah.
That, I presume, can't be good for its digestion system.
No, definitely not. I mean, I've never tried, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we know it's a way for plastic to sort of disappear from the surface of the ocean. Fish would go and eat it, and some of it stays in their guts and in their body, and then they die, and then eventually they're what we call marine snow, basically, is just leftovers, just go all the way down to the deep sea. That's one way to basically bring plastic and remove plastic from the surface of the ocean. So despite them, basically, marine life and fish, basically, they are cleaning the surface of the ocean by eating all that plastic.
Okay. Could we just leave them to it? To clean it themselves?
I don't know, should we?
Is
this what we're going to do? I don't know. That's discussions, ongoing discussions with ecologists, environmentalists, like what should we do with all that plastic? Should we just let nature do its thing, or should we actually go and clean it up? Because it's far away, it costs quite a lot of time, money, and energy to go and do that. And so you're right to question, like, should we actually do this? And this is, part of the research we do, is trying to understand the persistency and the long-term impact of that plastic. And, I'm sure if left alone, some of that plastic floating around will be there in a century in some form. And the long-term implications for marine life, for the climate, is really not well understood. So I think it's important to study it at least and try to remove as much as we can.
So that's kind of what you're in charge of, is that all the research?
Yeah, that's correct.
It's not just you doing it, I hope?
No, we've got a whole team of scientists spread kind of all around the world. I'm the only one in New Zealand, but I've got some in Hawaii and many of them also are in Europe.
So how did you get involved with this? You were doing some kind of ocean science beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Was it similar?
Yes, I mean, I started actually my career here in Raglan because I was studying in France and I came here for 6 months, and that was 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah. And I hear this story a lot when I interview people. I came here and I just stayed.
It's been great. But yes, I was working here as an environmental scientist, and we're doing modeling as a company used to be here called ASR. We were modeling, I was modeling different sort of things like pollutants, like oil spills and sediments.
What was the first one?
Oil spills, like oil.
Oh, oil spills, yes.
Yeah. So we're doing like different studies here and there. One day I kind of, through an organization that we were contracting for, they were interested into plastic pollution. And that was, 2010? And I started to modify some of the models that we had to be able to study plastics. And a couple of years later, we decided to publish with some colleagues living here.
Yeah.
We decided to publish those results. And that was a very, I guess, as a scientist, a good time to publish this kind of results, because it was, it's still a very young science. So a lot of things had to be done. And I guess I was there at the right time and published this at the right time. And from there, I just got more and more involved with different research groups all over the world. And eventually started to work for the ocean cleanup maybe in 2016.
Did you find them, or did they find you?
They found me, actually.
Right, Boyan, that's cool.
Yeah, Boyan actually found me before. That was probably 2013, 2014. He just created the ocean cleanup and contacted me because we've published some of this model results, and he asked me if I had any data to share. And I always believed in open science, so shared all the data I had with me.
Yeah.
And then we kept talking, discussing, and then eventually in 2016 he called me again and said, "Hey, can you work for us?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure."
Jumped on board.
Yeah, it's been a good ride.
On board. Tell us the difference between data modeling and the practical science of being out at sea on a boat.
Oh, it's two worlds apart. It's great because that's my background. I come from modeling side, and the ocean cleanup gave me the opportunity to spend more time on the ground and going out there. And yeah, it's very humbling when you do offshore work, because it's hard. It's really hard. It's yeah. exhausting. Nothing goes really according to plan. But yeah, you have to go and get that data. And it's I think for me as a modeler, it's been very good learning curve over the last few years to really realize like what it takes to actually get those few data points that help us modelers sort of like, you know, suss out any sort of issue. So it's, yeah, it's two worlds apart, but yeah, I think you cannot do one without the other.
Yeah, and like as you were talking about, like things just kept breaking and you had to come up with solutions on the spot and you're out at sea, can't go to the shop.
No, like, there's no shop around.
Were there times you thought this is hopeless? Are we not actually going to get what we want?
No, we kept the spirit most of the time, but yeah, there wasn't a day when something unplanned happened. Basically, like we always every day had something to figure out, and yeah, I mean, one thing you want to do is you just want to keep the spirit. I was fortunate this time to be chief scientist on board, so people would come and come and ask me, what do we do now, you know?
Oh, so you got all the problems.
But you just keep the good spirit and you figure it out. And like you said, there's no shop around, so you got to do with what you have on board, with the people you have on board. You go around.
Although there is an endless supply of bits of plastic.
Yeah, true. There's plenty of ropes around.
Yeah. So what were you trying to learn on this trip?
So on this trip, where we were mapping plastic, but we have different ways of mapping plastics. There is in-situ methods where we deploy nets to basically collect plastic. But then we've been also using sort of like less expensive, more scalable methods using what we call remote sensing. And this is basically using cameras, whether deployed from drones or directly from a vessel. And those cameras basically take a bunch of footage of the surface of the ocean, and we've trained software that are able to recognize plastic pollution at the surface of the ocean. And so we were trying to validate both methods. So we had our remote sensing method at the same time of our in-situ method, and collected data and samples at the same time. So we're able to see whether our remote sensing method is accurate. We're currently working out the results. We should have the results ready by next year. The idea is to validate the methods. Once the method is validated, we can actually just deploy cameras on vessels and not necessarily have to go all the time in the ocean, but we can just use, say, shipping vessels or sailing vessels.
Oh, yeah.
And provide cameras to citizen scientists that may be able to collect data for us.
So could you, is it a possible future that every boat that's out in the ocean will have something that can just pick up stuff as it goes by as well? Like you're talking about putting cameras on them, but could every freighter have something on it that was just picking up rubbish as it went?
Well, that's, maybe. I mean, you know, in some ways.
This is like a real long-term idea,
Yeah. I mean, there's been, some people working on kind of like solution that you can take on those kind of boats. Say like you have a intake of water and then you can filter it and extract microplastics, for instance. That could work. Obviously it comes with a whole lot of other problem, because there's obviously marine life. You don't want to like remove all the marine life. You have to like sort plastic from marine life. And also like those vessels, they're here to make, I mean, all the maritime vessel and shipping vessel, they're here to make money, right? And so you cannot just ask them to stop and collect plastic.
Yeah.
But why not? It is possible. At least for us, if they're able to collect data, and because there's hundreds and thousands of vessels on the sea surface as we speak right now, crossing all the oceans. And so we could just deploy like, rather light, cheap camera system that can collect data for us over time. It's very important to systematically map this. You cannot just go once and say like, okay, job's done, because it's very fast evolving. And so you have to see over time like how things evolve. And if you start to clean up, or if there is any sort of like mitigation policies going on, it's important to have all that data to support basically the, like how efficient you are and assess like whether like some strategies work and some others don't work.
So there's a lot of learning going on at the moment. But I'm just thinking, like, if someone owns a yacht and they like to sail across the Pacific, they could be doing this, like having cameras on board. And
absolutely. Yeah. And we do work with citizen scientists and volunteers sorry, that just take on cameras with them and just collect data for us. So yeah, any sailors out there willing to go and cross the South Pacific or anywhere, get in touch, and then we can provide cameras or any sort of other means of data collection.
Yeah, yeah. And there's something else I wanted to ask about too. I was interviewing Phil McCabe a couple of weeks ago about deep sea mining, and that I think that same part of the ocean is there's people trying to get permission to deep sea mine there. And I think one of the big, like what you're doing, just the lack of scientific information about that part of the world, like that's a problem. So what did you think when you heard, if you heard that that's where they want to do deep sea mining, like how much of a, what's the potential for disaster, I guess?
Oh, shoot, that's a whole different topic. I mean,
it's not your area of expertise, but I just...
No, you've been
out there and you are an oceanographer, so...
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit sad when you think that, you know, there's parts of the world that we still don't really know about and we're already sort of like planning to mine it. Yeah, it's quite sad. But yeah, like, it's... It's deep sea mining, and you know, it's, I mean, in one way it's like sort of like, you know, supported for like ecological transition. We need like all that material to like, you know, create wind farm and so on. And but then it's like, where are we gonna get it? And so yeah, people do come and say like, hey, we're just gonna mine the deep sea. It's terrible. Yeah, obviously it's terrible. And you know, I'll drift back to plastic because this is where my expertise is, you know. But it's the same similar thing about the deep sea. Is like there's areas in the ocean, most of the area in the ocean that we haven't explored. We don't even know the species living there, but we know that our civilization already reached those species because of plastic, for instance, you know, and microplastics is already like reached those really deep sea environments, and we haven't explored it itself ourselves.
Yeah. Actually, that's one thing I do want to ask about is actually the majority of plastic does sink. So, and there's a lot of it on the seafloor. Is that a problem being on the seafloor?
Less than at the surface, because I mean, yeah, most of that plastic on the seafloor, I mean, we don't really want it there, but then, yeah, it's, you know, once it's there, most likely will be covered by sediments and then just basically sort of, you know, deep into sediments, and they are, have no access to sunlight, and sunlight would be sort of responsible to degrade, like photooxidation is the degradation of plastic, and that happens at the surface of the ocean more than in the deep sea. In the deep sea, there's no light, so things will be conserved and sort of like stay there. And while like plastic at the surface of the ocean can degrade into smaller microplastics, but also can move because they float, and so can impact, you know, different sort of environments and transport species, like we were saying before.
Okay, all right. So you've come back and you've presumably got lots of data that you're trying to process at the moment and produce some papers, put the science out there.
Yeah.
How's like, have you got like months of work now after the 3-week visit?
Absolutely. That was the fun part, was in being in the ocean. But no, it's obviously it's not only me. I've got a whole team of people working on that. But there's two parts. One is to go through all the samples. So we've got all the bits of plastics in the container back to our lab.
So you'd look at every piece of plastic?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We document everything. We take a photo of everything. And we look at all the different markings and writings and clues that we can find on bits of plastics. So yeah, we classify, count, weight, everything. And then, so that's the sample part. And then the footage part, I was saying, we're testing remote sensing methods. So we collected like thousands and thousands of imagery.
So this is video footage?
Yeah, it's actually, this still photos, pictures. But yeah, like giant time-lapse of our whole mission. Taken from, we had like 6 cameras, 3 on each side, and then plus drones. So we have quite a lot of footage. That footage is being processed with a software that detects automatically all sort of plastics and objects floating at the surface of the ocean. Now the work is going to be to relate all that footage, that process footage, to our samples and try to see whether what we see in our cameras is also what we find in our nets. And that's going to happen over the next few months. I'm thinking by mid-2023, hopefully we'd have some data. And we may try to publish something around the end of 2023.
And I guess we should also talk about the fact that most all the stuff comes from land, mm-hmm. and a lot of it comes out of river mouths. And I know that the ocean cleanup is doing a lot of work in that area as well, isn't
it? Yeah, that's correct. So that's something I didn't talk about earlier this week at the Harbour View. But yeah, we do a whole sort of program in rivers where we try to intercept plastic before it reaches the ocean. So we have different methods, but basically our family of what we call interceptors. They're machines that we deploy in rivers and that can collect plastic in directly in freshwater environment. We just deployed a new one in Los Angeles, in Balluna Creek. I think that was Interceptor 007. You can learn about it
online. I actually just was looking at it before. So there was some rain, which isn't very common in California.
Yeah, and we're really happy.
And so that brought a lot of rubbish into the river. Yeah.
And that happens. I mean, rain is not that common, but we know it happens every year. Basically, you have, during the summertime, rubbish is accumulating on your watersheds and your riverbank. And then at that first rain, what we call the first flush, everything goes into the ocean. And we really wanted to time that deployment before the first rain, and we did. And it's great because, yes, we intercepted all that plastic, but also to me, what's really important as well is those images. Because you're in LA, you're not in Manila, in the Philippines, like you're in a rather rich country, rich city, but you still have that problem, and people from LA, Californians can actually see that now. They're like, oh wow, if that barrier wouldn't have been there, like this would have been like in the ocean and the coastline all around, right?
So this is motivate people to
absolutely.
Take care of their plastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that should, intercepting plastic in rivers like we do should not be like the end solution for plastic pollution. It's sort of like a techno patch for now, it's about sort of, okay, well, we stop the flux here, but then it's about addressing sources. It's like, hey, where is all that plastic coming from? And because we stopped it, we're able to analyze it, we're able to report and document it. And I think this is where our impact is as well.
And I guess ultimately what we're talking now is we're following it up the chain from the ocean to the river to the people handling it. But behind that is the manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And we're not slowing down our manufacture of plastic yet. Even though, like in New Zealand, we've got laws, we've had laws come in the last few years limiting plastic, but still overall globally, we're still making more and more, is what you've been saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're above 400 million tons of plastic produced every year. And the plastic production has been skyrocketing. The industry is highly investing into plastic production. Like we're talking like billions of dollars of investments for like to create new plants. And it's complicated.
That's a global movement that's going to be required to.
Yeah.
Because we all know corporations are powerful and they're trying to enlarge their business all the time. So that's just going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hopeful that we'll get this sorted out?
I think things are moving. Earlier this year there was a UN, United Nations Environmental Assembly, posted like a resolution to build a legal instrument, like a legally binding sort of agreement between nations to fight plastic pollution. And that's a big step going ahead. Right now we don't have anything, like we cannot go and tell a country or a company, hey, your practices are like polluting with plastic in the environment. So that's going to be a big change. If you see like projections though for the next 20, 30 years, like, it is skyrocketing. We're like very dependent on the stuff, on the plastic material. And so it's kind of, going into two directions. And it's very similar to climate change in that sense, because, we're very much aware of the problem. We've been aware for already decades, but, we still push towards, more and more.
And I guess, we have solved these kinds of problems before. Like we did stop producing greenhouse gases the way that we were, like the CFCs and things. We've done quite well at stopping people smoking in this country anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, I just heard some more stats today that smoking figures are down again, the percentage of the population. So we can achieve these things, even when it seems insurmountable. And we often focus on, we've got the big enemy out there that's against us, but does happen.
It's doable, but it takes you know, policies and legislation, quite often, you know, people would ask me like, hey, what can we do? I'm like, well, I mean, there's a few things you can do, definitely, but don't beat yourself too hard because, you know, it does come from a, you know, higher institutional level. Like, we're inundated with plastic. There's, I mean, you know, plastic is a fantastic material, and I don't think it's about going against plastic, but it's going against the use we make of plastic. And it is so cheap that we've invented single-use life and yeah. single-use object, and that's, you know, that's very stupid. And, you know, we can change that. I think we can get around that. And yeah, New Zealand has been, pushing some legislation around that, and not only New Zealand, but yeah, I think we can fix that, definitely.
I think that's one of the things I love about being in Raglan is that we were stopping the single-use plastics before the rest of the country. The rest of the country's joined in, and now we're one of the early countries doing something about it, so mm-hmm. that will spread to other countries. So, mm-hmm. yeah, this is one of the things that's cool about Raglan. Yeah. Hey, folks, I've been talking to Lola, who's just, back a few months ago from being out at sea in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. She's head of research for Ocean Cleanup. theoceancleanup.com. Check that out. And you can see videos of the sort of stuff that they've been picking up out in the ocean. They're miles, hundreds of miles from anywhere. It's all ending up there. So thanks for coming in for the chat and spreading the word.
Thank you.
And good luck with all that science.
Cheers, Aaron.